Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday morning wellness check with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Good morning, Dr. Most. I was with some people over the weekend talking about getting the booster. They've all had the three shots, and somebody said, well, I'm not going to get the fourth one yet because I'm going to wait till they formulate it to deal with these new variants. That's not right, is it?
No, not at all. Well, you know, the new formulation may be out, but not till probably fall, or at the earliest. So certainly if you want protection now with the rates going up, I certainly would get that booster now. I mean, look, you know, last week when we talked, Chicago was still in the low transmission. It is now, you know, stepped up, as have all the collar counties. So we are back into the medium transmission. We're seeing the number of cases go up, and unfortunately we're seeing a rise in hospitalizations as well.
Yeah, we heard a lot about the White House Correspondents' Dinner and a spike in COVID, most likely related to that, although they had a lot of parties leading up to that event where the protocols weren't as strict as they were on that Saturday night event. So what do we think happened there?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We looked at that and we said, oh my gosh, they were as safe as possible. They proved that everybody was vaccinated. They proved that everybody had a negative test prior to coming in. But you saw the event. You saw how close these people were seated. You saw how much they interacted. A lot of laughing, and you know, so unfortunately we know that there are gaps in this, that you can be a spreader before you turn positive. So certainly we want to make sure that any large gatherings like that, you have to make sure that you know that you're going to have the risk of coming out of there with an illness.
There is a story about a new COVID vaccine in the UK. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Valneva is a new vaccine, and it's interesting. When we looked at the vaccinations that we came out with, you know, 2 years ago, people were like, oh no, this new technology, this mRNA, I don't trust it. It's getting into my DNA. And of course, none of that was right. But there was a lot of hesitancy because of that. Well, this vaccine is actually made the way we made traditional vaccines in the past. So it took a portion of the COVID virus and it has made it so that it can't duplicate, it can't replicate, but it is going to be injected in the vaccine so that the body sees this as being foreign. It's doing the exact same thing that the mRNA is, except we went back to the traditional method. So anybody who has been hesitant to get the vaccine because of the technology and it came on too fast, this shows you not only how long it would have taken us and the lives that have saved because of it, but now you do have that option if you've been waiting.
So what's the future outlook for this vaccine, and is this something that's going to be common around here?
It probably will be rolled out here. I don't think you're going to see it as a big game changer. You know, the effectiveness is about comparable with the others. It's just going to be for that group of patients who are hesitant because of technology. But I think I would hope by now we have shown that this vaccine, look, when we started vaccinating people, you know, the number of deaths and the number of hospitalizations came down very quickly. So we have to understand that the vaccine that we have now works, and it's much more flexible. So when you talked about the new vaccine, that's going to be made by mRNA technology versus the traditional technology.
We all know quite a few people who have had or have COVID right now. And the troubling part of this, I think, since most of the people I talk to anyway are asymptomatic, they do pretty well. But those long COVID symptoms, that is still a very big issue, isn't it?
It really is, Bob. And as we've looked, you know, this illness, if you look at the history of medicine, this illness is still very much in its infancy. But as now we start to have data from a year, 2 years, we're starting to see, unfortunately, that those individuals who have had severe illness and have been in the hospital are still having sick symptoms 6 months, 12 months later. So we're really starting to track the long COVID and really starting to see the impact that this illness has beyond the individuals who are asymptomatic or just have it mildly. But we have patients still 6 months after being discharged from the hospital that are still short of breath, that still have brain fog. So certainly we know that as we capture more and more data, we're going to have a better picture of this, but it certainly is going to show the importance of us trying to curtail this illness as quickly as we can now.
Do you ever see long COVID in kids?
Well, we haven't seen many long COVID in kids, and it's interesting that you say that because when we came out with the CDC saying 75% of kids have had COVID or have been exposed to COVID where their body has a response, but we haven't seen that. We also haven't seen kids with their loss of taste and smell. So it probably shows that as we age, some of the immune responses as well as defenses of the host that we have starts to wane. So certainly we've been fortunate that long COVID hasn't been hit in kids as much as it has in adults. And remember, our hospitalization for kids with COVID is extremely low, where, you know, during Delta and Omicron, our hospitalizations were extremely high for adults.
Right. Health news you can use from Northwestern Medicine's Dr. Kevin Most. Normally you think of seasonal affective disorder as a wintertime problem, but because of the weather we've had up until now, a lot of folks struggling with it even today, aren't they, Doc?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, if you look at April, fortunately, you know, the weather's starting to change now, but if you look at April, it had the second lowest percentage of sunshine on record since 1893. So people that are feeling, wow, I just don't feel like I have a lot of energy, I just don't have a lot going right now, coming out of April, you're not alone. So we really have seen the extension of, you know, those quote-unquote winter blues that has gone well into the spring. So it's interesting, and like you said, talking about that study that came out, you know, out of Minnesota, again, a fascinating thing. We start to look at depression and mental health and the impact that it has on us.
And that study and the headline on that, chronic diseases are more likely to develop in certain groups of people with anxiety and depression, and really men and women, younger folks really struggled with this, didn't they?
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, when you start to try to do a study on mental health in a general population, it's very difficult to do. But this group out of Rochester in Olmsted County in Minnesota did the right thing, right? They took 40,000 people. They broke them up into specific milestones, 20 years old, 40 years old, 6 years old. And what they did then is scanned not only for anxiety and depression, but also for chronic illnesses. And what they saw is a very large increase in those that had anxiety and depression linked along with chronic illnesses, whether it be hypertension or COPD, and even in some cases, cancer. So it's very interesting, and it's probably one of those big heads up saying, you guys, we have to understand that mental illness impacts more in our lives than what we think, and that we need to get rid of that stigma of mental illness being something, you know, oh, shake it off. We have treatments for this. We have medications for this. We have therapy. And now we're with studies like this, it's going to show not only will your mental health improve, but also your physical health, which is just as important.
And this points up the need for all of us to keep up with exercise, do some meditation, and also get enough sleep.
100%. You know, when you look at this, and unfortunately, some of those with depression and anxiety, you hit on some of the things that happen there, right? They have a decreased amount of activities outside. They have an increased propensity to smoke and to drink more alcohol, and their sleep pattern is terrible. So often in those are the things that they think are kind of linking back to where you have anxiety and depression and why that leads to other chronic illnesses.
And for people who struggle with their weight, that is also greatly affected by this, isn't it?
It really is, you know, and we take weight and hypertension hand in hand. We take weight and back pain and hip pain and knee pain hand in hand. So certainly we know that if we can impact this, get their depression and anxiety treated, we know that not only will their weight come down, their hypertension will come down, their need for potential orthopedic surgery in the future will also come down.
It seems like once a week, as far as health news is concerned, there's a report on how a lack of sleep leads to weight gain.
Yeah, and it really does. You know, people say, well, why is that? And there's a couple things. One, we have those who have a lack of sleep and sleep later have a tendency to eat later in the day. Two, they have a decreased amount of sleep, so they're not as physically active. They don't feel as invigorated in the morning to get up and exercise and do those things. And I'll tell you, the weight and sleep link, just like this study, really shows the impact it has on cardiovascular disease as well as mental health.
Yeah, it's something we hear about all the time, and some of us struggle because there's not much we can do about it. But all the sleep experts I've talked to, when I ask them about naps, they say, well, if you get a two-hour nap and you're getting 6 hours at night, that doesn't mean you're getting 8 hours of sleep, does it?
No, it really doesn't. You know, napping, some people think that napping is really good because it does give your body a chance to rest, but you really don't get to that REM sleep portion, which is really important for the body to kind of reset its goals and to kind of rest. So some people, napping certainly makes a lot of sense. I know Mary Vandeveld, you know, at WGN, she's a big nap person. Mm-hmm. So certainly individuals who, especially like you and Joe Romano, guys that are getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning to go to work, you know, sometimes that nap in the afternoon or late morning really helps you get through the rest of the day and be more active.
Well, as you can tell, I nap between 6 and 10 in the morning.
Yeah.
Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine.
Hey, Bob, one quick thing, and I'll make it quick. You know, this is the start of Nurses Week, so please, everybody, if you know a nurse, please say thank you for everything that they do every day, and more importantly, what they've done these last 2 years over COVID. So we don't give them the recognition that they deserve, and this is Nurses Week. And you know, we have our special, you know, nurse for WGN. Joe Romano's mother is a nurse, so we appreciate everything that the nurses do and can't thank them enough.
Nurse Karen, one of the best.
There you go. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that. Can't give the nurses too much love. Talk to you next Monday.
You got it. Take care.